from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Nina Kim. Coming up on Forum, as we prepare to ring in a new year, Forum is looking ahead, beginning with new California laws that take effect in 2018. Did you know potential employers won't be able to ask about your prior salary, or that you can legally enter a crosswalk when the countdown clock is flashing? Then at 9:30, we look at a major proposal coming down the pike to deal with the Bay Area's traffic and transit congestion, which could include expanding BART and a brand new bridge. Gridlock on Bay Area roads grew 84% between 2010 and 2016. But is this plan the solution? That's all next on Forum. Join us after this news. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. No doubt the legalization of recreational marijuana sales will be among the most dramatic changes happening in California in 2018. But there are several regulations on the education, immigration, and employment front that could be just as transformative. In this opening half-hour Forum, we look at some of the new laws hitting the books next year. And let us know if there are laws that you want to highlight or have questions about by calling 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. On Facebook, you can tweet us at KQED Forum or email us at forum@kqed.org. Let me tell you who is joining us. Alexi Kosseff is a Capital reporter at the Sacramento Bee. Good morning, Alexi Kosseff.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Also with us is Melanie Mason. She covers state government and politics at the Los Angeles Times. Good morning, Melanie Mason.
Good morning.
And as I mentioned at the top, the big law, of course, is that recreational marijuana is available for purchase. So, Melanie Mason, how much can you buy?
Well, I actually don't have that figure off the top of my head. And one of the things that we need to sort of stress is how much this is going to be rolling out and still sort of in the works as of January 1st. There are some cities that have gone ahead and said that there are stores that can be selling as early as January 1st, but that's not the case across the state. So people who are looking into recreational marijuana in their cities should look up their local regulations because it's not uniform across the board.
Yes, they'll be all over the map. Some cities will allow cultivation, but not storefronts. Others will allow delivery only. There are lots of things going on with that. Alexi Kosseff, do you have a quick answer to that? Adults 21 and older?
You can buy up to 1 ounce, which is how much you are legally able to possess under current law. And as retail stores open, that's how much you'll be able to buy as well.
Well, Forum did an hour also on marijuana sales yesterday, which I highly recommend to listen if you want to dig deeper into that law. But since there's so much to cover, let's go to some other big and perhaps equally controversial changes, which are the laws related to the state's decision to become a sanctuary state. Alexi Kosseff, tell us about some of the laws passed that protect undocumented immigrants.
So the biggest fight has been over whether or not to allow police and state and local law enforcement to cooperate with federal authorities on immigration enforcement. It's not something that's been it's been an issue in some counties in California where there are sheriffs who are more sympathetic to those efforts. And so advocates wanted a statewide ban and came out forcefully right after President Donald Trump was elected with a law that would do so. The intense pushback, they ended up scaling back a little bit, but ultimately the law states that unless you've been convicted of one of about 800 violent felonies or other more severe crimes, that sheriffs can't hold you for law enforcement in their jails to come pick up, and they also can't cooperate in any capacity with federal authorities on doing like raids or things like that in communities around the state.
And there are more protections at the workplace, Melanie Mason?
That's right. So under one new law that's going to go into effect, it's now required for a judge to issue a warrant in order for federal agents to be able to come into someone's workplace for an immigration raid. And employers can be fined if they don't give their workers a three-day notice that there will be agents coming in and inspecting employee records. Another new protection that's going to be on the books has to do with landlords. So landlords can actually be facing civil penalties if they threaten to report a renter to federal immigration authorities if that person doesn't have legal status.
There are also efforts to protect undocumented children. How does that law play out, Alexei Kossoff?
Well, one of the interesting new laws on that front would actually allow the children of deported immigrants who are attending school in California to continue to enroll and attend those schools. It's just one of many sorts of different laws that lawmakers pass this year in order to try and extend the sorts of rights that immigrants have in their communities to make them feel like they're a part of California.
And speaking of schools and education, there are a slew of new laws that are pretty significant related to education, one in which, Melanie Mason, there's no longer going to be a high school exit exam.
Yes, that's right. That has to do, there was a controversy about sort of the high school exit exams and how they were being scored, and so this is lawmakers reacting to that. Another law that is now on the books, although it's kind of more on the path to being implemented, it doesn't actually sort of go into effect as of January 1st, has to do with community colleges in the state. So lawmakers took steps to waive fees for all first-year students if they attend community college first time. Right now, most low-income students would have those fees waived, but what they were finding is a lot of people weren't accessing that aid. And so what lawmakers were thinking was that if they make it free for all students, then they're able to scoop up more people. One thing that's important to note, though, is that that's contingent on budget funding, so we're waiting to see in this coming year's budget how much money the government actually puts towards that.
So that would be sometime in June, correct?
That's correct. So what we do know is that the Brown administration worked very closely with Assemblyman Miguel Santiago, who's a Democrat from Los Angeles, who put this bill together to sort of indicate we support this plan. So what Assemblyman Santiago thinks is that's a pretty good sign that there will be money in next year's budget to fully implement this law. But of course, you can't take anything for granted until there's money behind it.
I thought it was interesting that now menstrual products are free for low-income students. How is that going to be implemented, Melanie Mason?
So that targets specifically public schools that serve students K through 12 that really serve low-income communities, and they are going to be providing free sanitary products such as tampons or pads to students. This was a real kind of rallying cry for one legislator in particular, Assemblywoman Christina Garcia from Southern California. She's really sort of made this an equity issue, making the argument that women and girls who need to be accessing these products, that there is an added cost essentially for being a woman. And so by providing these products for free in these low-income schools, that might be one way to sort of mitigate the costs that are associated with being a woman.
Yes, and some comments about the fact that it may help girls stay in school. Was that actually a significant issue?
I think it was a talking point. I mean, I think that certainly there's the argument that, having access to these products, you might not decide to stay home from school that day if you don't think that you have access to those products at school. But I think that what we heard more generally from the legislature is, again, this kind of broader issue about equity and kind of not taking away the stigma about talking about these issues in public. That was something that Assemblywoman Garcia made a big deal of. She would do things like bring a doll on the assembly floor and call it Tampon Barbie, and ways to make it feel less icky to talk about these issues in public. And I think that's a big deal, not just for women generally, but particularly for young students, to feel like you can talk about your needs without any sort of embarrassment.
We're looking at new laws that take effect in 2018 with Melanie Mason. She covers state government and politics for the Los Angeles Times, and also with Alexei Kossoff, a Capitol reporter at the Sacramento Bee. And if you have any questions about the laws we're talking about or want to highlight ones we haven't talked about yet, you can call us at 866-733-6786. You can also tweet us at KQED Forum and post your comments on our website or email us forum@kqed.org. Alexei Kossev, speaking of sort of gender and equity issues, that had a lot to do with some of the employment-related measures that got signed into law. Can you describe some of the changes we'll see next year on that front?
Yes. So as always, there's a number of significant new laws that will be taking effect. One that really has to do with gender equity is a law that will make it so that employers, prospective employers, can no longer ask for your salary during the hiring process. Lawmakers pitched this as a way to try and close the gender wage gap between men and women. They argued that that gap is perpetuated when employers are able to base what they pay women on what those women were earning before, which was perhaps less than their male colleagues. So the idea now is if they can't ask you, they just have to offer you what they think you're worth, and hopefully that will be, that will allow for more parity. Another one that's very much based in equity, though more of a racial variety, is a new law that expands the ban the box policy that now exists in public employment to all private employers for the most part as well. That idea is that you can't put the felony conviction box on job applications anymore, so that it gives people predominantly, Black and Hispanic job seekers who have these arrests in their background a chance to come forward, present themselves, and if an employer is interested in hiring them and offers them a job, then they can go and look at their background and see if there's something there that gives them concern. But, advocates hope that it will allow them to have a better shot at first showing that they're capable of being hired for these jobs and should be given a second chance.
So it's not like they can't do a background check. It's just that there's a certain stage in the process where they would undertake
that. Once you've preliminarily offered someone the job, then you are able to go back and do a background check. There's also certain lines of employment where, for example, handling money in a bank, where you would still be allowed to make sure that someone hasn't been convicted of, say, robbing a bank. So there are certain exceptions, but for the most part, broadly, the idea is to get it so that private employers as well have to present a job application that doesn't have any information on there about, your criminal history.
There also more businesses will have to provide 12 weeks of paid parental leave. So this is a requirement that was already in place for employers with 50 or more employees, right? Having this requirement. Now what businesses have to provide this? Alexei Kossev.
So smaller businesses now will have to provide this benefit as well, those with between 20 and 49 employees. This has been actually a contentious issue for several years. Senator Hannah Beth Jackson, a Democrat from Santa Barbara, has been pushing and pushing to try and expand these rights. So the governor often vetoes this legislation when it gets to his desk because there's intense pushback from the Chamber of Commerce and other business groups. And finally, he signed it after several previous efforts, and starting January 1st, parents will be able to take up to 12 weeks of unpaid leave in the first year after they either have a baby or adopt a new child or get a new foster child.
Well, a listener writes, beginning January 1st, 2018, ammunition purchases are required to be transacted through a licensed ammunition vendor, but the state has yet to issue any licenses. What can you tell us, Alexei Kossev, about the changes coming to ammunition purchases and this listener's question?
So this is the first step in a number of changes that will be coming over the course of the next 2 years for ammunition purchases. It's the result of Proposition 63, which voters passed in 2016, as well as a number of other laws that have passed in recent years. This first stage is so that you can't simply order ammunition online and have it shipped to your house, you have to go through a licensed vendor such as a gun shop and pick it up in person or go there in person and buy it. Then the next stage, starting in 2019, there will be a system in place to do automatic background checks at the point of purchase. So that, like with a gun, you won't be able to simply buy ammunition. You'll need to be cleared as someone who's eligible to purchase it. But that's not coming for a little bit down the road.
But there aren't necessarily any additional licenses that need to be issued for people to go to a gun shop, right, to get what they may have
not
ordered from a catalog.
So that's done through sellers like the kinds of shops where you'd go and buy your guns to begin with. So they'll be licensed, and then you will go to those. So you as an individual don't need to get a license to buy ammunition. You just need to go to a place that sells it, that's licensed to sell it, and pick it up in person.
Melanie Mason, any other gun-related measures you want to highlight?
Yeah, there are a couple. So one actually rolled back a relatively recent law with regards to concealed weapons on school campuses. Under this new law, California school employees are not going to be allowed to carry concealed weapons onto campus. And previously what the law was is that school officials would sort of have discretion over the issue. So now this is more of a blanket ban. There is also more restrictions on anyone who has been convicted of a hate crime, which sort of targets certain groups based on gender, sexual orientation, or race. If you are convicted of a hate crime, you will lose your right to possess a gun for 10 years.
Well, this listener asks, how will the requirement not to ask for previous salaries be enforced? What can we do if someone asks during a job interview?
That is something that you, first of all, can then tell the person who is making that job that you are, you know, that it is, you are protected by law not to disclose that information. That is something that you would probably be able to alert the state civil rights agency if you feel that is being violated. But I think a lot of this is kind of just informing people at the outset of what their rights are and informing employers of what they can or cannot ask. I think that a lot of people, quite frankly, aren't aware that that's a question that they don't have to answer, that you can say that California law now protects your ability not to disclose that information.
Well, Tom writes, after hearing what's coming in 2018, hardworking, honest taxpayers will be fleeing the once great state of California. Are a lot of these laws going to mean higher taxes for Californians? Alexi Kossoff, any thoughts on that? I don't know if maybe this person is referring to minimum wage.
Not necessarily
wage.
The ones we discuss specifically, but I know there are a lot of people who are upset because of a new tax on gas sales that went into effect in at the end of 2017, I believe in November. That will continue to be a contentious issue this year because there are two separate efforts right now seeking to get a referendum on the ballot this year to overturn that. So I think a lot of people, that's at the forefront of their mind, even though it has already taken effect, because that's just going to be out there in the public. There's going to be a lot of back and forth debate, and we're probably going to end up voting on it again in November about whether we want to keep that new tax or not.
There's some interesting things happening in the health front. Melanie Mason, talk about how drug prices could change.
Well, what we're going to be potentially seeing is a whole lot more information about how drugs are priced. So there was a pretty landmark bill that passed this year that would require drug companies to provide more disclosure about how their drugs are priced and give advance notice to purchasers such as health plans, unions, and others if there is a planned price increase that reaches over a certain threshold. And so consumer advocates, labor groups, health insurers have said that this information is necessary because it provides more information about what is driving drug prices and helps people perhaps plan in advance. One of the things to note, though, is that the pharmaceutical companies, which lobbied very strongly against this bill, have now actually sued in federal court. They say that this bill is unconstitutional because it would essentially export California's policymaking to the rest of the country. Of course, that's kind of something that California tends to pride itself on, is that state laws tend to be trendsetters for the rest of the country. So it'll be interesting to see how much that argument carries weight in court. But you know, barring any sort of legal injunction, there is a website that's now set up by the state government that would be providing this information about disclosure. And what we're hearing is that transparency from the advocacy side is sort of the first step in understanding what is driving these higher drug prices.
I think also people would be interested to know or may not be aware that it's no longer a felony to knowingly expose someone to HIV. Can you talk about the context for that, Melanie Mason?
Sure. This is a law that got a lot of attention, probably not surprisingly, particularly in social media and on talk radio, because it's something that I think that people don't really think about. But it is currently, until as of January 1st, a felony to knowingly transmit HIV either to a sexual partner or through donating blood. And so what State Senator Scott Wiener, who's a Democrat from San Francisco, wanted to do with this bill is reduce that to a misdemeanor. And the reason he said behind that is because he says that the law that's currently on the books reflects a stigma about HIV that doesn't exist for other diseases. So other diseases that are on the books right now, it's a misdemeanor. He says that for HIV, it is sort of a disproportionate punishment. He also says that the law on the books right now disproportionately affects sex workers, and particularly women. And that's because when people are arrested and convicted for sex work crimes, they are required to do STD testing. If they're found to have HIV, they could get convicted of this felony. So by passing this law, they are then no longer to do that STD testing and therefore are not liable for the felony.
Alessia Kossoff, remind us, what does the minimum wage become next year?
So there's still two different tiers. If you work at a large company with at least 50 employees, it will increase by 50 cents to $11 an hour starting on January 1st. And if you work for a smaller that was 26 employees or more. And if you work for a smaller company with 25 or fewer employees, it will increase by 50 cents to $10.50 on January 1st.
Mm. Well, we just have a couple minutes left, and I wanted to ask you if there are any that you want to highlight that my questions haven't gotten to yet. And I'll start with you, Alexei Kossoff.
Sure. Well, my favorite, I think, interesting bill that will take effect on January 1st has to do with access to diaper tables in public restrooms. The reason I find this one so interesting is because it was a bill that lawmakers sent to Governor Jerry Brown 3 years ago, and he vetoed it. But this year it came back because there was a lawmaker in the assembly who's a new father, and he noticed how few men's restrooms in public have diaper-changing tables. And so he wanted to increase access. So they passed this bill again. Governor Jerry Brown signed it. And now going forward after January 1st, in new construction or significant renovations of public facilities like movie theaters, malls, restaurants, they need to make a diaper-changing table that's accessible to both men and women. So you may see that going forward in the next few years, and it will be easier for parents to share diaper duty.
Well, that's good news. And Melanie Mason, with California's always got a quirky law too. What's your favorite?
So my favorite is one that taught me about something that I didn't even know was illegal in the first place, and this has to do with pedestrians. So when you're crossing the road and you see the sort of blinking countdown of how many seconds you have left to cross the road, it's actually illegal to enter the crosswalk and try and walk before that those seconds have counted down. I didn't know that that was the case, but people actually get jaywalking tickets for this. So under a new law, it is now no longer illegal to enter the crosswalk when the countdown is done. You, of course, cannot cross against a solid hand. But it's meant to sort of help encourage pedestrians to walk more, which is, of course, California's perpetual gridlock problem, something that we should be encouraging. So I just enjoyed learning about something that I didn't know was against the law. It's now not going to be against the law.
Melanie Mason of the Los Angeles Times and Lexi Kossoff of Sacramento Bee, thank you for joining us.